Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to part two or part one, whichever way you're listening round to it. But this is the second show in our WrestleMania review type thing. And as we said on the other podcast, this is me and Mo. How are you doing, Mo?
Yeah, I'm tired still, but yeah, getting over quite the weekend, that's for sure.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And as I said on the other show, we're going to go through this in our classic style, where we go through all the matches and stuff. We probably won't talk about TV at all, really, because I imagine this will be a long show. So we'll crack on with the whole weekend. But more good weekend for you. I know you were watching more than just WWE content, weren't you? So just a good wrestling week, shall we call it, for you?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, there were those brave souls or mad souls, depending on how you look at it, that decided to stay up through the night, who were obviously here in the UK, catching live on-demand streams of shows from promotions like Evolve and others. And, you know, if you were doing that, then you really didn't sleep at all. So
two was bad enough.
Yeah. So, no, I wasn't quite so brave or committed or stupid. So, I just watched shows the next day. But I mean, saying that, I've still got quite a backlog to try and catch up on over the next few days and this weekend. So, yeah, it was just a mad number of shows. It really was. But yeah, very, very high quality wrestling across all the shows, and you know, there were many fans, including a lot of friends, who went over to New Orleans to try and catch as much wrestling as they could, and they just had the time of their lives. So I've committed myself to trying to get to WrestleMania next year in the whole weekend and catch as much as I possibly can. I feel like I'm the only one missing out here, so I'll see if that's possible. But no, it was a cracking weekend and a real treat for fans of wrestling.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, maybe some stuff was a bit of a letdown, but we'll get to that. but we'll start with the undeniably brilliant show that was NXT TakeOver New Orleans. The match that started the show was the North American Championship. If you think that's a silly name or whatever, that's another discussion. But Adam Cole, EC3, Killian Dane, Lars Sullivan, Ricochet, Velveteen Dream. I mean, was this probably the perfect way to start the show, Mo?
Yeah, I'd say so. Yeah, very high octane, energetic contest. Went for over 30 minutes, and it didn't feel like it because was all action. You know, really had very few lulls throughout the contest, and they kept a good pace to it. And yeah, I thought the mixture of, you know, the smaller guys alongside the big men in Killian Dane and Lars Sullivan worked pretty well. So it was a good mixture, and it made for a, you know, really, really good match, one of the better ladder matches we've seen in recent times out of the WWE in the widest sense. So, no, it was a very good start to the show.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we saw Adam Cole obviously win. I think that was your prediction more, so well done on that one. but how well did you think it did for the debutants? Obviously, EC3 coming back to the WWE, and then Ricochet, who was obviously probably the one more people were most excited about. Did we see the best of them, or was it just a drop in the ocean? I mean, especially with Ricochet. I mean, he started it with, I think it was that springboard, I don't even know what you'd call it, where he took out literally everyone on the outside. But is it just a good beginning?
I think it was a springboard shooting star, but yeah. No, I mean, you know, there's so much more to Ricochet, and a match such as this allowed him to show a little bit of it, but, you know, a singles match is where, you know, he would have perhaps shown a little bit more, but, you know, I think we'll probably have to wait a few months before we see exactly what he's capable of. And if he gets a really big match at the TakeOver prior to SummerSlam, then that'll probably be the first time you see him in a really significant match. I think we'll probably see two or three really good matches from him on the weekly NXT show, but mm-hmm. You know, the WWE generally doesn't like to have its talent on NXT put on blowaway matches on the weekly TV show. So we will see some decent stuff, but again, it will just be snippets of what he's capable of. Whereas EC3 is a solid worker, but nowhere near Ricochet's level.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's more of a personality type performer mm-hmm. than somebody who's really amazing in the ring.
And what did you think of the two big men? I mean, Lars Sullivan's more of a monster kind of grounded heel, not heel, monster type character, isn't he, where he's just all about power and stuff like that. And Killian Dane's quite unique in the style that he still works a bit like an indie, doesn't he? He's obviously still got the high-flying stuff for his, considering his size and stuff like that. But them two really impressed me, considering what they did and what they went through. I mean, Killian Dane, I mean, he's so unique. I mean, I could see him being a blast on the main show as well as NXT if he does get a singles run eventually.
Well, yeah, that's right. I mean, you know, Killian Dane can certainly go. I mean, again, he's not really had a chance to show it here, but he has in the past had some really, really good matches in singles competition. He had a really good match against Nakamura for Revolution Pro here in the UK a couple of years back, just before he went over to the WWE. So he's capable of performing at a high level, and I'm sure that he'll get called up to the main roster in the next 12 months. And Lars Sullivan is somebody who has come into the business at an older age. I mean, I think he's still in his early to mid-30s, but he's got a very unique kind of throwback look to him, like a monster heel from maybe 30, 40 years ago. But, you know, he still showed that, you know, he's learning and developing all the time. Certainly didn't look out of place in this match, so I would suspect, you know, he's another one that the company would like to do something with on the main roster.
Yeah, he definitely has a place. I mean, just look at what Braun Strowman's done. I mean, he's obviously quite unique on the main roster, and he's got over hugely popular. And it's showing that the monster type character isn't dead on the main show. But Velveteen Dream, I mean, I don't think it's been it's unfair to criticise him for not reaching the lofty heights of his Aleister Black match from a couple of takeovers ago. But I mean, he had some nice spots in this. I think it's a Death Valley Driver, wrote a flipping Death Valley Driver that he did to, I think it may have been Ricochet on the ladder. I mean, that was a very good spot, but he's just potential, isn't he? He has the world at his feet, and he really does, doesn't he?
Oh, yeah, he does, yeah. You know, he's very young, but time is very much on his side, and he's already so, so good, given his lack of experience. So there's no need to rush with him. I mean, they can keep him there in NXT for another couple of years if they wanted to, and let him become very, very polished before calling him up. Mm-hmm. Saying that, though, I wouldn't be surprised if he does get called up within the next 12 months as well. But as I say, no real rush to bring him up, and I hope they kind of take their time with him, because if they do, then you know, they'll reap the rewards in so many ways.
Yeah, and we'll mention Adam Cole and combine the next match as well. So he obviously won. It was your pick, but do you think this is the right decision? And why do you think it's the right decision, if so, Mo?
So with Adam Cole, you know, he's somebody who has excelled as a heel champion. You know, he did very well as the ROH champion when he held the belt in Ring of Honor. And, you know, I've got every faith that he can do the same with this North American Championship. And just had the feeling that, you know, going into the match, he would be the one of all of the individuals to pick up the title. In saying that, when Ricochet came out last, I thought, well, that's interesting. Maybe they want to just put a belt on him straight away. But that seemed to be a bit of a swerve. But of the individuals in the match, I thought it was realistically between two. It was Ricochet or Adam Cole for me. And I thought, no, they won't go with Ricochet straight away. Adam Cole's been impressive since he arrived, and I think they'll reward him with a championship, and so they did. But I'm going on his experience from the Ring of Honor. I think, you know, if he replicates that, then he'll certainly be a good first North American champion, and it'll be interesting to see how he gets on with it over the coming weeks and months.
Yeah, I'm gonna combine the tag team match in this. I know the women's match was after this on the actual card, but we saw Undisputed Era keep the tag team titles with just a brilliant bit of storytelling with Roderick Strong turning on Pete Dunne. The match itself, what it was just a bit of a madness, wasn't it, really? But just your thoughts on the Roddy turn yourself, because I thought it was bloody brilliant.
Yeah, oh yeah, it was. You know, I didn't expect it, and most people didn't either, to be fair. It was so well executed, and, you know, it was just really, really smartly done, because I had a feeling that they might want to put Kyle O'Reilly with somebody else. But I thought it might just be somebody else who's within the NXT or developmental system, but not on TV at the moment. But for them to go with Roderick Strong, that's fine. Again, they've got history. Both were in Ring of Honor. They fought against each other. They know each other well. So, you know, they should mesh very easily, and I think they'll make a very good team. But yeah, the angle itself was a very nice one, and I'm quite looking forward to seeing Roderick Strong as a heel. I think as a baby face, sometimes he can come across a bit too vanilla, a bit too ordinary, whereas as a heel, he might just stand out a little bit more.
So yeah, obviously Roderick Strong's joining the Undisputed Era. It looks like, well, I think they kind of teased it a bit on Twitter that Pete Dunne put a picture of him with Mustache Mountain and Tyler Bate. Do you think there's a feud between UK and North America kind of coming? Because, I mean, that is absolute printing money, that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that'd be something that'd be quite cool. They've got the WWE UK shows now announced for June, two events on successive nights at the Royal Albert Hall. I think it's in June, and you know, they'll be looking to line up some matches for that show, for those two shows on NXT. And so yeah, having an Undisputed Era against Mustache Mountain and Pete Dunne, you know, would be a good way to build up night one, I think it would be. And I think it's second night, which will have the tournament to crown a number one contender to Pete Dunne, who is obviously the current United Kingdom champion. But yeah, that would make sense.
Yeah, good stuff. Good stuff. I think that tag match it was better than it, I think most people expect, just from a storyline perspective. It was such a good swerve. But we'll go back to the women's match. For me, this was a bit of a low light, but I'm not sure if that's because the women's match itself was bad or just the rest of the card was just different levels. Shayna Baszler beats Ember Moon, who now has debuted on Raw. Your thoughts on the match itself and Shayna Baszler as a champion?
Yeah, so I think I got this prediction right as well. Wasn't quite so successful on the WrestleMania picks, but never mind. Yeah, I was, again, happy with this match. I thought it was a pretty decent match. But I think it felt more underwhelming than it perhaps really was, because the match before it was so, so good. And because of how good the ladder match was, it took the wind out of the sails of the crowd to an extent, and they were quiet during the women's match. But they certainly picked up a bit more towards the end, and you know, what they were treated to was something I thought overall was quite effective and did its job. So yeah, I was quite happy with it.
Yeah, I mean, there was a couple of nice spots, wasn't there? I think the eclipse onto the outside was very good. I thought Shayna Baszler trying to pop her shoulder back and was a bit bloody weird. but reversing the eclipse for the finish was very good. I think that was very smooth. That's probably the highlight of the match for me. It was weird. I thought with the first match at the previous takeover as well, the match didn't really click with me. I think that was kind of the same again, but... yeah, I think it'll be better for maybe Shayna Baszler to get a new feud as well, because I think we've seen Ember Moon for a few years now, haven't we? So I think if they reignite the final of the Mae Young Classic, it may spark something new into the title again. But yeah, I think it was all right. It's just the fact that it was on such a strong card, it probably didn't help it either, did it?
No, that's right, yeah. So, you know, certainly being the match after that great ladder match, and then especially on a show that featured one of the all-time great matches in company history, it was always going to look like a match that was pretty poor. But, you know, looking at it objectively, it really wasn't. It was actually a very fine match. In some ways, slightly better, I thought, than the match they had at the TakeOver in January.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely agree with that. But we'll move on to the NXT title match. Almas, if he topped his previous match at the last TakeOver, I mean, he was doing wonders, but it wasn't too far off. It was a very, very good match again with Aleister Black. Obviously, Aleister Black is now the new NXT champion. We saw Zelina Vega get involved probably a bit more than usual, which was maybe a bit annoying, but it kind of added to the match to a certain degree. But what did you think of this match? I thought it was very good.
Oh, yeah. I thought it was an exceptional contest. You know, it's really a great showcase for Aleister Black and what he's capable of. I mean, for those that have been watching him for a long time, you know, they've seen matches of this quality out of him. Almas is somebody who has taken his time to adapt to the WWE style, but certainly in recent months he's shown that, and obviously that was never more evident than his classic against Gargano in January. The match was really, really good and very well worked, very well timed, good layout for the whole contest. And Aleister Black won and became the new NXT champion. I don't think I called that one. I think I went with Almas to retain, possibly. I'd have to think that. But I'm fine with Black as a champion. I think he'll be a fine champion, and I hope he's protected and used in an effective way. I mean, he's different to your typical performer, you know, in terms of his promo style, his in-ring style, his character. But, you know, what makes him different is what makes him so appealing. And as long as WWE tries to protect that, then, you know, they could have something quite special on their hands.
Yeah, I mean, I think NXT will be, it'll be pretty damn successful. I mean, he's already champ. I think NXT is not the worry. It's the when he eventually gets called up the main card. We've seen dark characters like him. I don't want to compare him to Bray Wyatt for your sake, Mo, because he might come fight me. But we've seen some characters like that suffer a bit on the main card. I mean, Baron Corbin maybe as well. So it'll be interesting to see how he does eventually get on the main card. But NXT, it'll be bloody fantastic. Whoever he's feuding with next, whether it's Almas, Drew McIntyre, whatever and whoever, it'll be a very good match. But more, I mean, it's what we've been waiting to talk about, isn't it? I mean, I said it on last night's pod, I can't wait to talk about this match properly. Johnny Gargano defeats Tommaso Ciampa in what is Wikipedia is saying is a 37-minute absolute classic. I think I said in the preview, if it's anywhere near as good as Gargano v Almas, it'll be up there for match of the year. I mean, this has just took the piss out of that last match, and that was a 5-star match. So I think wrestling journalists and people like that are going to have to rework the starring system, because if Almas and Gargano was 5-star, this is like 6-7-star, because this is probably the best match I've ever seen.
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of people that just were blown away by the contest, and you know, the whole booking, the whole layout of it was just incredible. Obviously, let's cover who won. Johnny Gargano won the contest. I picked Ciampa. Clearly, that never materialized. I thought that if they'd gone with Ciampa to win, that could have given the storyline a bit more legs, whereas they went with Gargano getting his big win. In a way, it was a kind of match and performance and the whole storyline that went with it that almost was like how you end a feud and end a program. But it certainly has the potential to go on for a little while yet, and especially when they have worked a match of this quality, you wouldn't want them to just stop and not work together again. Saying that, though, good luck to both of them topping that match. That would be an almost impossible task. but if any pair can, then it's them two.
Well, the Cruiserweight Classic match was bloody good enough. Never mind that one.
No, I mean, this was a match which, you know, you just had to admire in every respect. No matter which way you looked at it, whether you're somebody that loves a match to tell a strong story, whether it's something that's got a strong heel face dynamic, whether it's something that has great drama, athleticism, whatever your tipple is when wrestling matches are concerned, this had something for you in abundance, to the extent you could have overdosed on it. That's how much this match brought to the table. It really was quite an incredible contest. And, you know, I mean, I've been watching these two for a number of years, you know, in the independent promotions. And, you know, they've always been, well, certainly for the last 5 or 6 years, been very, very good workers. But I mean, Gargano in particular, he's gone up to another level entirely. You know, the last few months, he's looked like the best babyface in the business. And
he's Brian levels of babyface, isn't he, on NXT?
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's just so likable, so well-liked. You know, whenever he does come up to the main roster, he's just going to be huge. And, you know, my only worry is whether he'll get the Daniel Bryan treatment or whether they actually would have learned from their past mistakes and book him and protect him carefully, because they should know that they've got a potential superstar on their hands in Gargano. He really does come across like a special talent, and that's because he is. So all credit to both of them. I think they probably had quite a hand in the storyline for this contest. And I think that, you know, they were probably quite instrumental in putting it together. You know, just as well, because, you know, what they assembled was, you know, as close to perfection as you get in the pro wrestling business. It was one of the all-time great matches. Not for me, the greatest match I've ever seen. And in fact, probably not the best match I've seen this year. But certainly, quite incredible. Oh yeah. From the WWE, it's match of the year. Mm-hmm. And, amongst the top five or six matches in the company's history. I'd have to kind of weigh him up against the others, but it might just be the best ever in the whole history of the WWE.
Yeah, in my viewing time, it's probably up there as one of the best I can remember. I may have to go watch stuff like The Undertaker versus HBK and stuff like that. But yeah, Hart versus Austin in the submission match, I think they're the ones off the top of my head that people love to talk about. But this match, it was so perfect from start to finish. I mean, even the entrances. Tommaso Ciampa coming out with no music, just to a chorus of boos. He's instantly gone from someone who's been injured for so long to being probably the biggest heel in the company. Never mind bloody NXT. It was just bloody brilliant. And that concrete powerbomb spot, I mean, I actually winced with that. I physically just felt a bit sick watching that. I was like, it was just brilliant. And the storytelling at the end where he was going to sit when he was sat next to him and stuff like that. Jesus Christ. Whether it was Triple H or the two competitors, I imagine it was a mix of them both and the writers and stuff like that. But it just absolute kudos to them. This match, it got what it's deserved after such a 8 month, 12 month long build. It was just bloody brilliant. And I think we said it on the last week, we don't want to see him on the main event too soon because I don't think he'll be able to do that again. but we'll. I don't want to say unfortunately, but we go from the highest point of the weekend to some of the bit more lows. Pre-show, I mean, got to be a bit time cautious, so we'll skip the Battle Royales, because I know you'll just want to shit on Bray Wyatt, and the woman's one was terrible. So, the Cruiserweight Classic, I mean, other than the adverts interrupting the match, which was just absolute farcical, I was expecting it to be a bit better, I'm not going to lie, but I think it did its job, and I think we've got a surprise winner, didn't we, Mo? I think we both picked Mustafa Ali ourselves.
Yeah, you know, I thought it was actually quite a good match. Easily better than those two matches that I won't name.
Can you call them matches? Can you?
It would be a struggle, certainly. It was just a really good match. And I was disappointed, though, obviously, that Ali didn't win. I certainly connected to him over the last few weeks, the way they were developing his character and you know, the push he was getting and the story and everything else that went with it. You know, I thought that they did a really good job of that, and certainly felt like there was perhaps plans to make him champion at the show. But I mean, as happens every year at WrestleMania, they will have a change of plan. And this certainly felt to me like they were going into the show with the intention of making Ali the champion. But then for whatever reason, they changed their mind, maybe even as late as the day of the show. And again, this has happened quite frequently. You'd be surprised, in fact, at how often the endings to WrestleMania matches are changed and how late they are changed sometimes. But, you know, nonetheless, I mean, I'm still fine with Cedric Alexander becoming the champion as well. He's also very, very well deserving of the title. Worked really hard over the last few years to get into the WWE and then make something of himself in the company. So, yeah, I was glad, and I'm sure that we'll see more from the two.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it wouldn't surprise me. I haven't watched 205 Live this week. I did watch NXT. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if they have the rematch at the Saudi event thing. But we'll move on from the pre-show because we have got a lot to rattle through. The show opener, Seth Rollins defeating The Miz and Finn Balor. Another surprise for us more. I think we all picked Finn Balor, if I remember correctly. Seth Rollins wins in, again, another perfect curtain opener for me. Exciting match, full of decent spots. Everyone had a good part to play in the story of the match. Even Miz coming up with some decent spots. I think he did Skull Crushing Finale from the top rope, which was very, very good to see. Frog splashes. The fact that Seth Rollins got the curb stomp back, it just adds so much to it because his other finisher was crap. but the curb stomp, it's just brilliant. And some slightly weird entrances with the LGBT thing for Finn. I'm not complaining that it was there. It just seemed a bit weird at the time. But your thoughts on this match, Mo? I thought it was pretty damn good.
Oh yeah, it was absolutely. Great start to the show. I thought, all three worked really hard, and the match was laid out quite well. Gave it a good amount of time for the opener, and some nice near falls at the end. And somewhat of a surprise with Rollins winning, but I've got no complaints about that. Whether it was T or Balor picking up the title, we would have ended up with a great champion either way. So, I was fine with that. And, as far as the show itself, there was no better start to the show. So, that was a good job all round.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And we'll move on quite quickly because I think we'll be talking a bit more at length about some of the later matches. Charlotte Flair breaks Asuka's streak in defending her championship. It obviously goes on to SmackDown and loses it as Carmella cashes in. For me, more, this match was really, really good, but I thought the wrong person won. I thought the streak, it kind of felt a bit premature to me, and especially the fact that it only got 13 minutes. It was a good match, but I think Andy brought it up in the WhatsApp group. It needed a bit more longer, and I don't think the streak got the respect it deserved. It didn't seem to be a momentous occasion, which I thought it should have been.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Yeah, I mean, the thing with this streak is that the majority of fans, I think, don't really care about it. I think part of the reason is it was not really something that was hyped to a great extent whilst the street was developing. In a latter kind of year or so in NXT, it would be mentioned now and again, but the more effective streaks are those that are pushed down your throats almost. I mean, you think to the Undertaker one related to WrestleMania, and then you also think to Goldberg when he was in WCW 20 years ago. These are all things that were pushed down your throat, and you'd know about them. Whereas with the Asuka one, it would be mentioned, but in passing almost. So I think that's why fans didn't care about it whilst that streak was in existence, but they also didn't greatly care when the streak was broken by Charlotte. I felt that a better time to end the streak would have been for her to do so by dropping the title.
Yeah.
And maybe something like SummerSlam might have been the time to do it. But
that's my thinking as well, yeah.
You know, it was not something I was, violently objecting to by any means. I wasn't too fussed the fact that she lost the contest. And I thought it was actually a great match. Charlotte's best match probably since she's been on SmackDown, in fact. And I mean, you've got to have some sympathy for her that, certainly.
What she's working with.
Well, yeah, that's right. But also, she had to kind of go into the background to an extent as well, and was almost making. Yeah. So, that was just what it was. But she certainly comes to the fore now, and there's a lot of talk that she could be in the main event of next year's WrestleMania against Ronda Rousey. As the first women's main event in WrestleMania history. So, that's something that, we'll have to see if that happens. But, the match itself was of a very high standard. They worked really well together, and, some fine spots in the contest as well. So it was nice to see Charlotte work with somebody that's really high caliber for a change.
Yeah, I think that's the point. That's a good point, that Charlotte, when she has a chance to showcase her full potential, she really does do it. Now that you've mentioned the Ronda Rousey potential main event next year, I think it kind of makes sense, albeit I'm still a little bit disappointed. But if they are trying to build Charlotte as kind of like a Super Cena thing, as like someone who's just unconquerable kind of thing, I think it kind of makes sense if they are going the Ronda Rousey route. But yeah, that kind of makes more sense. But I still think the streak could have went a bit longer, as you said. SummerSlam may have been the occasion. May have even main evented a SummerSlam. And then it may have seemed a bit more momentous. But anyway, it was a very good match. I mean, maybe the ending was a bit premature, but I think that's more to do with the people behind the curtain rather than the two performers themselves. So good stuff for me. Probably one of the best women's matches since, I don't know, maybe the triple threat of the 2 years ago at the WrestleMania. But we'll move on from that. Oh, God. I just realised what's next on the list. the US title match. Mo, do you want to give this more than 3 seconds of your time?
I will, but not much more. It was what it was. It was just a card filler. And
a big middle finger.
yeah, it was screw you for getting behind somebody that we don't want you to get behind. So obviously Rusev didn't win the title, and furthermore was the recipient of the pinfall. So
and
he
also SmackDown, and now he's fighting the Undertaker in Saudi Arabia.
he was, but he's been replaced.
Oh, has he?
He's already been replaced by Chris Jericho. Yeah, hot off the press. So Jericho has been drafted in to replace. So yeah, probably the tweet sent out by Rusev, "Bury me softly, brother," didn't go down well. Not a good few days for Rusev or his fans. Mm-hmm. But certainly. Fans of Jinder Mahal would have been lapping it up.
All three of them.
Yeah, He's a champion again, won the title and won it clean over Rusev. So, you know, it is what it is. Now we're going to get another title run with somebody that, you know, he's a very limited in-ring performer. But, you know, as a heel character, he's actually not too bad. So, you know, we can't expect great US title matches, but no, we might see some semi-entertaining interviews or segments on SmackDown. But you know, if you're expecting five-star classics from Jinder, then you might be waiting a while.
Well, at least we found our new pee break on SmackDown, I suppose. Yeah, less I say about this, the better, really, especially now that Rusev, I mean, there was obviously rumours that he was asking for his release and stuff like that, and I think it may be true, but it'll be interesting to see what happens with the draft and stuff next week, and we'll come back to the Rusev situation when we get a bit more time, and then we can talk about it properly. But the next match, this was probably... one of the highlights for most people, I imagine. Kurt Angle, Ronda Rousey defeating Triple H and Stephanie McMahon. How much of a surprise was this for you, Mo? I mean, Ronda Rousey just looked brilliant.
Yeah, I mean, she did. You know, when we were talking about it on the preview show the other week, then I think I did speculate that it should be a pretty sound match. I wasn't expecting it to be a poor match just because, you know, with the likes of Triple H involved and Kurt Angle, they weren't going to allow it to come across poorly. So, you know, I expected it to be a decent match, but I was wrong because it was match of the night. It was quite amazing. I was... actually almost blown away by how good it was. And it all credits to Triple H and, you know, whichever other agents they worked with, whether it was Pat Patterson, Michael Hayes, I'm not sure. But, you know, whoever it was involved in putting that match together, you know, they did a great job. It's common knowledge that, you know, the four individuals, and in fact, the referee, Drake Wirtz, had been working on the match down at the Performance Center in Orlando over a number of weeks. So it was a very well rehearsed match, very well practiced match, one they put a lot of time and effort into. And it paid dividends because you know, what they delivered, what they treated us to, was something that was well above expectations, even from the most optimistic of fans. I don't think anybody expected it to be this good. I don't think anybody whatsoever expected it to be match of the night. And whilst some might disagree, others might say that other matches were better. For me, this was clearly the match of the night. Rousey, for somebody who was competing in a first pro match, looked incredible, quite frankly. And you know, if this is what she can do in her first match, then good grief, we're in for something special. And all credit to Stephanie as well, as a heel. She performed so well. And, you know, a lot of full-timers who are heels can learn a thing or two from Steph.
Oh, God, yeah.
that was certainly a fine performance from her. And even the two guys looked good as well. But it was the ladies that stole the show. That was... quite a remarkable performance from those two.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I agree with your shout for match of the night as well. It was such a surprise to me because before the show, this was one of my actual concerns for it. I think the fans would enjoy it, but I think it may have been more of a fun match than rather a good match. And what we got was both, and it was just so good. It was such a surprise. And as you say, I thought the men would carry the match with Kurt versus Triple H, but it really wasn't. It was, I think the weight of the match was kind of shared quite well. But if anything, the women really did steal the show. I mean, as you say, Steph, who wrestled probably like twice in a decade, this being the second match, She just played her part perfectly. And the best thing for me with Ronda Rousey is they showed her being a bit vulnerable, showed her vulnerability. And we've seen with Brock, obviously, coming back from his UFC spell where he was just unbeatable. I think he's only lost like a handful of matches since he's came back so many years ago. But with Ronda Rousey, obviously working with Steph, who is a part timer, who isn't a wrestler at all. I think it bodes well for the future when she is working with Charlotte, Sasha, Bailey, Asuka, whatever. That there is potential for matches going there rather than just steamrolling them. So yeah, that was probably the best thing for me. So as you said, the potential there is just bloody massive. I'm really looking forward to where it goes. And again, I'm raw. She goes back and tries to embrace Steph's arm again. So yeah, she's definitely popular. I mean, my shout for the heel turn on the preview was just stupid. I think I underestimated how popular she actually is. But she's definitely a star. She's got it. And once they polish her up a bit, maybe on mic skills, maybe in the ring, when it's not able to be rehearsed as much, let's see where it goes. But absolute potential there is scary. So we'll move on from that to another mad match. Bludgeon Brothers beating the Usos and the New Day to gain the SmackDown Tag Team Championships. They were booked really strongly, weren't they, more considering who they were against. This is New Day and the Usos, who have carried the tag team division on SmackDown for so long and had probably one of the feuds of the year and stuff like that. But the Bludgeon Brothers just absolutely steamrolled them. And this is them showing they have a lot of faith in this tag team.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, this was a match that, I really didn't care much about, because there was just so much, stacked on the show that, it was really lost in the shuffle. It really was. And, I just felt that, okay, here's the match. Okay, fine. It's over. And within 2 minutes, I've forgotten about it. So, it was one of these matches that didn't come across much like a WrestleMania match. I mean, yeah, we had the nice entrance, I suppose, if you want to call it that, for the New Day with, the little guys.
Oh, but, God, I forgot about that. That was bloody brilliant. And I bet Andy's head exploded.
Yeah, that was, quite amusing. And, that was, for me, perhaps the highlight of the whole thing. And after that, it was all downhill. But, it was a shorter match, by comparison to the others. And, they kind of worked hard, but, they didn't have enough time to put something together that was outstanding or all that memorable. And, it was just a match, really.
Yeah, I think we'll see the potential, well, after the draft sort and see which tag teams are on SmackDown, etc. But I think them as champions should be quite fun because we haven't really seen a monster tag team that isn't AOP, really. But we'll move on from that, and kind of one of the weirdest booked matches, or if we're going to call it a match, segments of WrestleMania. Undertaker defeated John Cena in 2 minutes 45, but that's only telling half the story, really. John Cena obviously sat through the pre-show and the first couple matches of WrestleMania, and then he's seen running backstage as a referee comes to tell him that The Undertaker may be here, which is now an instant classic meme on Twitter, etc. Then he's in the crowd. Then he's in the ring, waiting for the Undertaker, and then it happens. More Elias comes out. I mean, that was bloody brilliant, and I don't care what you say. It was brilliant.
Yeah, it was. Not a massive surprise. I mean, there was talk about Elias being part of the Rumble match on the pre-show, and then he clearly wasn't on the show, so it sort of gave away that he was more than likely going to be involved somehow, some way in this. One of two things, either the Cena Undertaker segment or the tag team contest later on for the Raw tag team titles.
If only he was involved in that.
Yeah, so, I mean, we still got to see him come out and play the guitar. It was obvious all the way that we would somehow, some way, eventually get Cena versus The Undertaker. And we did. I didn't expect it to be as short as 2:45. I thought even if The Undertaker is limited in what he can do, they'll surely still go at least 10 minutes. But we didn't even get that. So, that was a shame in a way. But the upside to The Undertaker working such a short match is he looked good. He physically looked good, in better shape than he had in previous WrestleManias the last 2 or 3 years. And, he moved, perhaps a little bit better than he had previously. I think he's had operations since his last WrestleMania appearance.
I think his hip was done, I think.
Yes, yeah. So, if that's an indication, then, maybe he needs to replace his other one as well. It certainly shows that he isn't quite done. Obviously, he won the contest. And we know that he's competing in the casket match against Chris Jericho now at the Greatest Royal Rumble event in Saudi Arabia. So at the very least, we'll probably see him at least at the next WrestleMania. And he might look to even stay around for another year after that. And if he does, then that will mark 30 years of The Undertaker in the WWE, near enough. So, maybe that's what he's now intending to do, is to stick around until then. And if he does, fine. But,
I was just going to say, do you see a rematch with Cena? I think that's probably one of the natural storylines for him now. Do you think that's a possibility for next year?
Yes, it is. With Cena, though, it's a bit confusing as to where he sits in the whole pecking order within the WWE. I mean, what is his role now? What is the intention for John Cena going forward? Have they decided that he can't be allowed to surpass the title reigns of Ric Flair? If that's the case, then they might not ever book him to become a champion again, which for somebody who's only just turned 41 and physically still clearly appears to have a number of years left in him would be quite a shame for...
Probably in his best form for years as well.
Yeah. I mean, he's certainly not somebody you can describe as past his prime. He's still an exceptional worker with the right opponent. And it's just a bit strange that they have booked him in the way they have. And especially bizarre, considering that he's still arguably the most popular talent in the entire WWE. When it comes to ticket sales, merchandise sales, he's still number one. So it is a bit strange that they book him in the way they are. I know that he's now got other things on the go as well, and with TV and movies, etc. But nonetheless, surely when he is around, they can use him a bit more effectively. You only have to look at somebody like Chris Jericho. He comes and goes as well. But when he is around, they do a pretty decent job usually of booking him and making best use of it. Whereas you can't really say the same for Cena over the last 6 to 9 months. So I'd like to think that they'll do something a bit more meaningful with him. And maybe that might be a rematch at WrestleMania next year with The Undertaker, possibly even as early as SummerSlam this year. But whatever they do, they need to improve on how they book him and how they use him, because the evidence of the last 6 to 9 months is certainly suggests that they could be doing a much better job of booking him.
Yeah, I mean, as you say, I think it's just highlighted by getting squashed by The Undertaker in 2 minutes. I mean, it's not some random, it's not a Bray Wyatt type situation, it's John Cena. It's one of the best of all time and stuff like that. It was just a disappointment for me. I mean, it was a shock factor, but I was expecting to see something of a competition, not a... That, but we'll move on from that. Probably another high point. I don't think, not for match quality wise, but just an absolute spectacle of seeing Daniel Bryan back in the ring. Obviously, him and Shane winning. I think this is where people may have been expecting a swerve because obviously the stipulation that Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn lost the jobs on SmackDown if they didn't win. But no, we got the Daniel Bryan and Shane McMahon winning. The match itself wasn't great, but how good was it to see Daniel Bryan back in?
Oh yeah, it was so much fun. He was immensely popular. The reaction he got coming out and even during the match as well was something quite special. The early going saw Shane in the ring for a good, must have been 8, 9, maybe 10 minutes, and the crowd was dead actually. They were very, very quiet while Shane was in the ring, and they only came alive when Daniel Bryan tagged in. And he really looked physically like he hadn't lost a step at all. Was moving around the ring just as well as he used to, and the execution of moves and the timing and everything was spot on. So. And that was very pleasing to see, and you know, he certainly made a good effort during his time in the ring. But just a shame that you know, he couldn't have been out there in perhaps a singles contest with a really good opponent and put together an exceptional WrestleMania match. But as it was, on the whole, it was still a good tag match, but nothing outstanding by any means. But nonetheless, great to see DB back. And Shane, with his whole diverticulitis and all of that kind of storyline, you know, who knows exactly where they're going to go with it. But it was just a little bit on the bizarre side, the way that whole thing was booked. But
Injury at the start was kind of... I think it kind of killed the crowd, as you said, but... Yeah, it was such a good moment to see him back, and I think even a better moment on the SmackDown where he fought AJ Styles. I mean, that's the stuff of dream matches that you'd probably want to see at WrestleMania itself, but we got it on the second night after WrestleMania. But yeah, as you say, a singles match would have been good, but we did kind of get that on SmackDown, albeit it wasn't the stage that match deserved, but hopefully we see them two work again. But yeah, just to see Daniel Bryan back is the main point from this, and we'll see how Kevin Owens and Sami fare on next week's Raw, I imagine. But that'll get sorted. We'll move on. Oh God, I can only describe this as a disappointment more. It may be a bit harsh, but I was expecting so much more from AJ Styles and Shinsuke Nakamura. It should have been match of the weekend before the weekend, but obviously Gargano and Ciampa pissed all over that. But this match for me, it wasn't a bad match. It just wasn't what I was expecting. It seemed a bit slow with a flurry at the end, which kind of is what you see on like Raw and SmackDown a bit. So for me, it just kind of felt. It wasn't what I wanted.
Mm. Yeah, no, I can't disagree. Easily the most disappointing match of not just the show, but the entire weekend, in fact. You know, as I've mentioned on the pod in recent weeks, I had high expectations for the contest, was comparing it, kind of referencing the last match that they had in one-on-one competition, which was in another company, New Japan Pro Wrestling, back in, I think it was January 2016. And that was quite amazing, incredible, really special match. And I thought, you know, they had it in them to pull together something that even if it wasn't quite as good as that, would still have been an outstanding contest in its own right. And we got nothing of the sort. And the conclusion I drew from it is that, unfortunately, Nakamura is no longer the great worker he once was. He's getting on in age. I mean, he's actually younger than AJ Styles, but, certainly throughout his time on SmackDown and even for a fair amount of his latter period in NXT, barring one or two matches with Samoa Joe, Nakamura has looked like somebody who is past his prime. And that's sad to see. I mean, he did work a very physical style in New Japan, and perhaps injuries have taken a toll now. But if this was all he was capable of, then perhaps we have seen the last of Nakamura as an elite worker. But he has turned heel. He did turn heel after the match, and obviously cemented that on SmackDown. And it'll be interesting to see where he goes as a heel character in the coming weeks and months. But as one of the world's best talents who can put together amazing matches, I think that Nakamura, unfortunately, is no longer with us. So that is sad, especially for somebody like myself. I've been watching him since his very first match back in 2002 as a rookie. And, he's had an amazing career in the subsequent 16 years. But, he just isn't looking like the guy he was back in New Japan. Or even if you think back 2 years ago to the NXT match he had against Sami Zayn.
Yeah, I was going to ask, was that the only time we've seen the Shinsuke Nakamura in WWE? Is that the only time you think that is him at his peak?
Yeah, that's as close to the old Nakamura as we'll probably ever see in the WWE. Because even after that match, like I say, bar a couple of really good matches with Samoa Joe, we didn't really see him hit those tights or come close to it during NXT and his time there, and certainly not on SmackDown. So, it is sad, but then obviously we've got AJ, and we've seen on a number of occasions over the last 12 months that he has been able to deliver in the ring, and he will move in a different direction eventually, but there's still a bit of mileage left in this one, so we'll see how it pans out. And maybe having a stronger face heel dynamic might help both of them to pull together a better match in the future.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if they fight a Backlash or the Saudi thing. And it wouldn't surprise me if Nakamura wins the title eventually. He may have been past his peak, but I think they wanted the big moment to be the heel turn rather than a title change. So maybe the delay in that. But at the same time, even if Nakamura's past his best, I think we've seen AJ Styles carry worse talent to have probably more exciting matches. Even if Nakamura's past his best, he'd still be able to perform at a certain level. I mean, we've seen AJ Styles have good matches with fucking Jinder Mahal. Even considering that, I'd expect more. But I think storyline-wise, it was at least interesting, albeit disappointing, the match itself. But I think we'll eventually see Nakamura get the title. Because I think you can't have AJ Styles carrying. I know he's capable of carrying a show on his own, but you need SmackDown to be carried by some other people as well. It'll be interesting to see how it goes. And I think Nakamura. Did he work as a heel in Japan much? I'm not sure. He seemed to be always a face from stuff I've heard. He seemed to be that popular guy. But did he ever do good heel work in Japan?
Occasionally he went into other promotions and was part of interpromotional rivalries where he got to work in a heel style as the outsider coming in. I think he did that with Pro Wrestling Noah. In New Japan, I don't think he did work as a heel from memory. So I think he was always a face. I mean, the face heel thing in Japan is generally not as strong or as prevalent.
Set in stone, yeah.
As it is, certainly in the West. I mean, in Japan, it's more of an emphasis on it being a sport. So,
right.
The whole face heel divide. I mean, in saying that, I mean, New Japan in recent years under the leadership of two individuals called Gedo and Jado, who are the main bookers for the company, have certainly introduced a stronger face heel dynamic to certain characters, but traditionally it's not as strong in Japan as it is elsewhere. I think he'll be perfectly fine as a heel, and I think he'll get on quite well. And I think it'll make him a bit more interesting, because I felt he was certainly losing a bit of momentum because he just wasn't able to go out and have those killer matches as a babyface.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think in the WWE, albeit stereotypical and stuff like that, WWE tends to make foreigners heels, doesn't it? Let's be honest. So it may be easier to book him as a heel from their point of view and get him over in that regard with the crowd. So it will be interesting to see. But I think we have to call this what it was, and was a disappointment. But we'll move on from that. The crowd's probably dead at this point. I actually missed the match. Nia Jax versus Alexa Bliss. It just went as expected, didn't it, really? I think we all expected Nia to win, and that's what she did.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. It was what it was. It was just a match that was based around somebody getting a title shot and then ultimately winning that title because of bullying, body shaming, things like that. And WWE wanted to put out a kind of, positive story that, somebody who is at the receiving end of bullying and that kind of behavior can overcome it. So that was a good moment in itself. But the match itself was really nothing special at all. One of the weaker matches on the show. And, again, didn't really resonate with me or connect with me in any profound way. So it was just a match. And unfortunately, Alexa had lost. And I'm sure she'll pick up the title again in due course. She's just too good. Unless, of course, she moves back to SmackDown. But with Raw is a clear number one brand. In some ways, it'd be a bit of a shame for her not to continue on the Raw roster. But we'll find out next week.
Yeah, absolutely. But as I mentioned before, we came to this match. I think the crowd kind of it did its last bit of energy with Daniel Bryan, and then after that, it was kind of dead until Roman Reigns entered the arena. But before that, we'll do Braun Strowman and Nicholas versus The Bar, Cesaro and Sheamus. Match itself was pretty crap with a couple interesting spots. I mean, it went 4 minutes. But what an absolute farce this storyline's been, Mo. What a joke.
Yeah, I mean, after all that build-up of who's going to be Braun's tag team partner, for him to just walk into the crowd and pick out a 10-year-old in Nicholas, talk about underwhelming. That really was. In fact, for a split second whilst he was walking around, my old mate...
It's all the NXT guys.
Well, one of the trainers, in fact, from NXT, long-time British wrestler, Johnny Moss, came on to camera shot, and I thought, oh, not going to pick him out and have a match with him, is he? But he was just hanging around. And yeah, you're right. I mean, they showed some of the other NXT talent at ringside as well watching the show. But no, it was none of them either. No, it had to be a 10-year-old, Nicholas. He was actually the son of one of the referees. In fact, the referee who refereed that match It's his son.
So he's not a. It's not a make a wish thing. That was the other rumor, wasn't it?
No. So
that kind of makes it. That makes it worse.
Yeah. No, it was a planned spot, but in fairness to Nicholas, he actually came across like somebody who genuinely had no idea what was going on. Whereas you see sometimes, you know, in the past where WWE has used paid actors and, you know, they've come across so phony that the whole thing is clearly, quite an embarrassing, stage segment. Whereas it didn't feel that way. It almost felt like, he genuinely picked out somebody at random and decided to have a match with them. But, it was all, part of the show. It was nothing at all clearly to write home about. Nicholas, tagged in and, tagged back out and, was shaking like mad. You can't really blame yourself.
I'd be shaking just being in the crowd, never mind in the bloody ring.
But, it was just, perhaps somebody's idea of trying to be clever, but I think most people really didn't, think it was all that clever. It was something that came across, as I say, quite underwhelming and, further played into the, narrative of those that thought this was a disappointing show. Which it wasn't, by the way. I thought it was actually overall, quite a good show. It did feature, for me, three really, really good matches and several others that were also pretty good or good. So, all told, nothing to complain about. But was it one of the best WrestleManias? No, it wasn't.
Yeah. We'll discuss the overall picture of WrestleMania at the end, just for a little bit. But on the Braun Strowman thing, I think it's made worse that he's literally took the piss out of the whole tag team division, and then on Raw, he just gives the title back. I know he couldn't go to a room with a 10-year-old kid, but I thought they'd at least do a storyline there or something. But no, they just handed it back and then allowed this tournament thing to see who fights the bar. But it's kind of destroyed the Raw tag team division, let's be honest. But hopefully it recovers quite well from that. But what a farce, after all the rumours of legends coming back, new talent getting promoted and stuff like that. It just such a disappointment. I mean, it's a nice moment for the kid, obviously, but not paying to see the kid.
No, absolutely. But, it was just a disappointment. Hopefully, they'll make a bit more better use of, Braun, in
the afternoon.
Royal Rumble event coming up later this month.
Yeah, and speaking of disappointments more, the main event, I mean, it was what I feared it was. The crowd shat on it, and it just became a suplex fest with, like, five. I think me and Andy counted it last night. There was probably about 5 to 7 moves in the entire match. It was pretty terrible.
I thought the match overall was a pretty sound match, but but the reactions to it just killed it completely, because the fans just didn't want it to play out in that kind of way. I mean, we had, bear in mind, Roman Reigns kick out of the most protected move in the entire company over the last several years on, was it 4 occasions before he?
I think it may have been more, to be honest. I think it might have been 6.
Well, I think it was pinned maybe the sixth after the 5th or the 6th.
Yeah. Is that not just overkill, though?
It almost is, but I think they felt that, when he did kick out, they would get amazing reactions. People wouldn't believe what they were seeing. And, you see that sometimes where, you know, people kick out of moves that they think are the finish, and then they just go apeshit. Whereas the fans at the Superdome were more interested in beach balls. You know, people, I mean, people that were watching didn't actually know any of this, but there were police going into the crowd and ejecting people that were, you know, getting these beach balls out and tossing them around. So, you know, if you were wondering what all of that booing and cheering was all about, that was actually to do with...
Oh, it wasn't the match.
No, absolutely not. No, no. So the fans couldn't care less about the match because they knew that Brock is heading to UFC at some point, and they just don't like Roman Reigns. So they decided, we don't care about either guy. We don't care what's going to happen in this match. We're going to shit all over it. So, I mean, in some ways, I actually thought they could have been even more harsh towards the match. But, I mean, if you ignore the reactions of the fans and just look at the match on its own, yes, the moveset was quite limited, but you have to expect that with Brock. Overall, I thought it was still put together as a decent match, but the reaction to it just destroyed it completely. And, you know, it was in certain respects somewhat of a disaster. You know, will it change WWE and how they do things? No,
because
they won't allow the fans to dictate to them how they book their product and who they push and who they don't. So, you know, it'll be more of the same.
Yeah, I mean, if I could be asked to rewatch it more, I may have rewatched it on mute, but I don't think I could bring myself to rewatching it. For me, it's just the fact that it was the WrestleMania main event, and I think it's Roman's fourth main event in a row. It just seemed a bit much. I think the only thing that was probably good for me, well, not good, but just unexpected, was Brock winning. I think everyone expected Roman to win, just because of the UFC stuff and all that. I just expected him to win. I think most people did. But Brock obviously won, kind of stopped Raw having a weekly champion again. But it was just killed. If it was by the crowd, I don't think the match was becoming of a WrestleMania main event itself. I mean, we saw a similar situation when Brock originally left WWE Goldberg, when the crowd killed that match. It wasn't as bad as that, obviously, because that match was terrible. But it just shows that having Brock and Reigns in a WrestleMania main event, it's not going to be a good match, a good enough match to main event WrestleMania. And the crowd aren't going to allow it to be that good either, because it's just going to be shat on. So yeah, I think they need to either do it at a small event where there's probably a more casual crowd, but at the same time, you've built Brock up for this long. It needs to be at a big event for him losing the title and going off into the sunset. So I think they've screwed themselves here. But if it rains now, he's going to have to. I know we just said WWE aren't going to change, but he's going to have to be a heel sometime, because he can't keep going to these big events and getting shat on. It's taking the mick. But hopefully Brian coming back and being the biggest face in the company kind of changes that, because if the Fort Reigns was the scene of success, I mean, whilst Brian's there, he's just not going to be, is he?
No, that's right. No, they've got to really think long and hard about where they're going with Roman, because no matter what they do, no matter what they try, fans just don't accept him. I mean, for me, he's actually a heck of a talent. He's a superb worker.
Absolutely.
You know, you look back at his matches on the big shows over the last 2 to 3 years, and he's had so many great matches. You know, he really is a top performer. But the portrayal of him, you know, fans are just not into. You know, if they turn him heel, there's every chance that the fans would actually just go completely into him, actually.
Cheering.
yeah, absolutely. But WWE and Vince in particular are very, very stubborn, and they just don't seem willing to budge. They just will try and try, and they did the same with Cena. The fans refused to accept him for years and years, and yet they never turned him heel. And
was it ever this hostile, though?
Oh yeah.
Even a big I know he had matches with Shawn Michaels and stuff like that, but was it ever booed out of the building like that, hijacking a match?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, you think back to ECW One Night Stand 2006.
Oh yeah, but that's special occasion, isn't
if
it?
If Cena wins, we riot. But the thing that does benefit Cena is that that international crowd and that hardcore fan base wasn't attending your WrestleManias or Royal Rumbles in quite the numbers that they do nowadays. And I mean, there was still quite a heavy presence of them at those shows, when Cena was, the runaway top star, yeah. 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 years ago. But it's even more now, and obviously with social media being much more prevalent now than it was then, that doesn't help either. So, it's just something that will carry on and carry on. And the thing with, Roman Reigns is that, these reactions are purely because he is the chosen one. And by that, I don't mean he's David Moyes. But the WWE decided a number of years back that he is the guy that they want to be the top star in the company. And this is something that they decided at the same time that they were trying to push Daniel Bryan off of the main spot on the card and down the roster, down the pecking order, whilst the fans were rebelling and saying, no, we want him as our top star. And so for Roman Reigns, he was wrong place at the wrong time, and he's never recovered, and he maybe never will.
Yeah, that Royal Rumble was something terrifying to watch, wasn't it? But yeah, I mean, we've seen him compete, from popularity standpoint, against Cena, against Punk, against Bryan. He's just fighting a losing battle against the hardcore crowd, whether it's, if you want to call it, European crowd. I mean, hopefully once Raw gets back into the swing of things and back to a normal crowd, which might be next week, he may get back to a more neutral kind of reaction. But these big events nowadays, it's so diverse, the crowd, whether it's from Europe, America, Asia, whatever. The British crowd, I think it's mainly the British crowd, they just don't want him, and they seem to be the most boisterous in the crowd, so they won't allow him. So maybe this Saudi event is the perfect situation for it. But we've already seen on Raw that he seems to be setting up a feud with Samoa Joe, which it should be good. It's a tough time for Roman at WrestleMania, I think. But hopefully he's not in the main event again next year, because it is getting a bit farcical and a bit forced down our throats too much, that if he has 5 WrestleMania main events in a row, he'll just be, it's probably surpassing Hogan levels of fucking top man. So yeah, hopefully next year he'll be in a more protected position, shall we say. But that's it for the card, Mo. I mean, you kind of mentioned it a little bit, but in terms of ranking for you, I mean, you said there's probably three very good matches for me, and then some very good moments. But where do you see this? Where do you see this in the recent Mania, shall we say?
Yeah, I thought it was better than probably the last two WrestleManias. And overall, is it top 10? Maybe, might be certainly top 12 or 13, but, I mean, three really good to great matches, and overall of the, was it 14 or 15 that we had on the card?
14.
Yeah,
14, yeah.
I had 7 down as being good to great. So, you know, and even of the others that weren't, you know, they weren't offensively bad. So it was overall a really, really enjoyable show. I just wish it didn't go quite so long. 7 hours for a show is just bit too much. And
do you think that has to change? Because we talked about the crowd a bit, didn't we?
It was
dying at times.
Yeah, I think they struggled to keep with it for that long. I've been to shows. I mean, it wasn't actually a WWE show. It was a UFC show that we prelim showed in the main card. Went on for 5+ hours, and that felt like quite a chore. So to try and get through. So 7 hours in a huge building, when the toilets and things like that are likely to be ram-packed, and you know, concession stands and all that kind of stuff, it can become quite an uncomfortable experience then. So I mean, WWE ideally should cut the whole show down and not look to try and get absolutely everyone in the whole roster onto the show some way, somehow. And that's part of the problem, that these days they do try and get everyone on the card, and that's how you end up with 14 matches. And there just, in my view, is no need for it. You know, you should build that card up to be the special show featuring
mm-hmm. 8, 9
your best matches, your strongest feuds, and bring him to a climax at that show. And, you know, I think that'd be far more effective and go down well with the fans. So that'd be the ideal way to go.
I'd rather the pre-show be like 1 hour and then the main show be 4 hours or something like that.
Mm.
It is too much. I mean, I said this to Andy on the other pod, I watched NXT on the live all night, and then I ended up staying up like an extra hour and a half because it was that good. Whereas with WrestleMania, it was just simply that long. I fell asleep on the Daniel Bryan bit, and I woke up a bit later, and I was like, "No, I'm not staying up for this. I can't.
Yeah, yeah.
I just simply can't." And it's just too long, even for people watching on TV. 7 hours is like 3 films. It's bloody stupid.
I mean, you can fly. You can fly to, Dubai by within that time. So, or even to, the US in that less time than that. So, it's just way too long. But. Again, it looks like we're stuck with these very, very long shows because I don't think they've got any plans on cutting it down.
Oh, God, it's going to get longer, isn't it? I think I kind of agree with you. I'll probably err on our side on the slightly negative side of this WrestleMania thing. I think it kind of got progressively worse, and I think the last 3 matches were that much of a disappointment. It kind of leaves more of a bitter taste in your mouth.
Mm.
So I'd probably say it was a poorer WrestleMania, but WrestleManias kind of struggle having like an absolute complete card, don't they? And they have for so many years. So I think it had some really good moments, and it had some really awful moments. But as a weekend on a whole, I think NXT again, it's just shat all over Mania, and I can't see this changing anytime soon because NXT is simply perfect at the moment. NXT, massive highlight of the weekend. Ronda Rousey again, massive highlight. And then the low lights, I'm going to have to go AJ Styles, Nakamura, and then the main event. Whether it was a good match or not, I think it's just the fact it wasn't allowed to be anything. It just kind of killed the entire show with the 2 main events being what they were. So yeah, that would be my highlights and low lights. Any highlights and low lights from you, Mo?
No, I think that's pretty much covered it then. Certainly the mixed tag, an unexpected match of the night, and the tag team partner for Braun, quite underwhelming, as was Nakamura versus AJ, which was by far and away the most underwhelming match, disappointing match of the night. But all things considered, for me, it was still ultimately a good show.
Yeah, yeah, I can see why. But we'll finish up there, Mo, unless there's anything else you want to mention from TV that caught your eye.
No, that kind of does it. I know Andy covered the TV with you. On the other part of this pod. So no, that's fine by me.
Good stuff. But thanks for listening, everyone at home. And this has been the second part of the WrestleMania review. Obviously, if you haven't listened to me and Andy, go check that out. It's more about the storylines and stuff. And obviously, we mentioned TV as well, debutants and stuff like that. So if you want to check that out as well, feel free. We are on Twitter at PW_index. I've been your host, Guy Drinkle, and Mo, thanks for joining me as usual. Thanks for listening, everybody. Goodbye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.